Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Okay, welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on Halloween Eve. It is Wednesday. I'm Doug Kazarian. We got Travis in the booth and the controls here. You ready for game seven tonight?
Always. I mean, it's game seven.
Right.
And I don't care who wins, which is the best feeling, because then you can just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, given last night. I'm stunned that Max Scherzer is going to start. We're going to talk game seven with the director, Mr. Executive Director. Obviously, he's more than a rooting interest. And we're going to talk also football first with Aaron Renning. Also, just chat a little NBA with him as well this first week and change of the young NBA season. So a lot to get through. But I'm with you, Travis. No real rooting interest, although I hope Mr. Murray is happy, so maybe I'm rooting for the Nats.
How do you feel when your team gets knocked out? How does that impact your rooting?
It's a great question, because transitive property, it makes your team look good, but then it also hurts more when you had the game won. So it's a great, great question. I don't have an answer. I think it varies over the years.
It's also, for me, like the Nationals, they haven't won. You get the whole Bryce Harper part of it. So like, I think I want the Nationals to win, but I'm not going to, like, I don't care. So I can just enjoy it, but I think it'd be better if the Nats win.
I know what you mean. I think it would be a cool story. The Bryce Harper component's very compelling.
It's also really bitter for me. There's like a billion former Indians players in this World Series. They're like, oh, Michael Brantley enters game six hitting like 400. I'm like, oh, that would have been nice if he would have done it. I don't know when he's in Cleveland.
What do you think about our teams maybe making a deal for Francisco Lindor?
I know he's not going to stay in Cleveland just because it's just not going to happen with what he's worth.
I love him. He's like one of my favorite players.
One of the most fun players to watch.
Magnetic smile, awesome player. Just love him.
So, yeah, not happy.
Hopefully he's a Dodger soon. Let's get to it.
Pay that man his money.
Aaron Renning back for more, and a solid job a week ago. And ER, I'm most pleased with, because I only care about myself here, is the way you talked me towards the plays that were solid and away from the ones that weren't. So tip of the cap to you, my friend.
Well, that sounds good. Good to be with you again this week. Hopefully we can do a little bit more of the same.
Yeah, so I got off the USC side. I was on the team total over, but that's okay. I felt comfortable about it, but you got me on the over. And you nailed the Virginia game. It was just a little too many points in that one.
Yeah, I mean, we got a little bit of a break with the weather.
Yeah,
that came through. We saw some unders last week, so yeah, it got a little dicey in the end. But hey, welcome to the world of sports betting, right?
Right. So talk to me about the weather this coming weekend, because it's affecting how I'm approaching some games. I like Indiana a lot against Northwestern. No surprise, I've been fading the Wildcats for a lot this season. But I'm worried about weather in the Midwest. How are you approaching things on that front?
Well, you always have to kind of keep an eye on things, and you just. Sometimes you could look on Monday and Tuesday and et cetera, and things just don't come to fruition. It was a little bit, and then you have weeks like last week where you had this tropical front come up through the Gulf and kind of change everything, and you didn't really expect probably some of those Big Ten games, the Midwest, some of the MAC, to be as poor weather as it turned out to be. So you always kind of have to keep an eye on it, but so does everyone else. And when you see totals, especially that start moving and you don't really wonder why, well, the first thing you need to do is check the weather because that usually has something to do with it. I know the game tomorrow night on Thursday night, Halloween on ESPNU, the Appalachian State, that game was certainly going to have some weather. That's a total that opened, I think, globally around 50 and has moved now down a good more than five points. So there's always those examples out there.
So I guess let's go through it like we did last week. But I want to start with this in Bloomington, with this Indiana-Northwestern game, because, look, we've talked ad nauseum about how inept the Wildcats offense is, and I don't know how else to explain it other than they've faced six Power 5 opponents, okay? They have only gotten four first-half field goals in those six first halves. That's one in four of them, and then the other two, they were shut out at halftime. So This is an offense that can't do much. Now, IU could give up a few more points, but I think IU's offense is much more explosive. They scored at least 31 against all their opponents except Ohio State. And the Wildcats, look, they had back-to-back home games where they were kind of up for, right? They had Friday night game with Ohio State in town, then the Iowa game, a team they had beaten, I want to say, three straight times there. So they kind of had Iowa's number just given their running attack, and they just got waxed. They got waxed. And I just don't see how this is a good spot when they're going to go on the road and face a team that's been pretty good, 6-2 this year.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder kind of where everything is at. With this Northwestern team at this point, 1-6 straight up. Remember, this is a program that played in the Big Ten championship game last year. Obviously, zero chance for that to happen at this point this year. And you know, Northwestern was just an interesting team because you looked at the box scores, et cetera, and you always wondered how they got it done. But they were able to get it done. And this year, it has really just been the opposite that has happened within this program, et cetera. And, you know, it happened the first week against Stanford, certainly from an ATS perspective. When they have that late fumble, Stanford jumps on it to get the spread scoring cover in that game. And when you talk about inept offense, Doug, I don't think that paints the proper picture of how bad this Northwestern offense has been. Because it has been something else. And, I, it's hard to find a word to describe it because you look at them right now, and no question they've played some slow teams and some really good defensive teams, but they are on a run of 0, 3, 10, 15, and 10 points their last five games. So getting to 10 is an absolute chore for this Northwestern team. And I just don't see any turnaround that because if you watch this team or if you watch them play each and every week, there's nothing about it. This is a team that just has a hard time moving the ball, certainly has a hard time scoring or putting any kind of points on the board as well. And, you know, the defense has been pretty good. You do kind of wonder at what point do they have, you know, there was a little bit of dissension, you know, probably about a month ago that you heard where the defense was kind of getting sick of the offense, et cetera. But the defense has been sturdy. It's been good enough. When you look at Indiana, interesting with third-year head coach Tom Allen, who has done a really good job recruiting and building depth. You can see that on display here. They clinch a bowl eligibility, I believe, for about the earliest time ever last week in that win at Nebraska. You know, their last two games that they played against I guess you could say a little bit more pacier teams in Nebraska and Maryland, if you will. They were able to score 38 and 34, 35 against Rutgers before that. I'm not sure. I think it's a little bit fluky how they've scored. This is a defensive orientated program and how they've been under Tom Allen. He was essentially the de facto defensive coordinator until this year. He gave that up and passed that down to a 32-year-old Kane Womack, who's done a pretty good job. So the quarterback has kind of been a little bit the situation with Penix or Ramsey. So I think they do enough to certainly maybe spread cover the spread, but do enough to win this game. But I think the score is low here. You just can't count on more than 10 from Northwestern. Indiana should, you know, it looks like a 20-10. 24-10 type game. I'm on this one under the total. Going to continue to ride that until Northwestern just shows something different that they can score the football.
So the total here is 43.5 or 44s out there in the market. Looks like a team total of about 16.5. That's pretty high for the Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the last 5 weeks you're cashing under the total on that. And yeah, again, they face some very good defensive teams, but Indiana is certainly of that ilk as well.
I'll tell you what probably the bet of the year is. Indiana team total first half under if it's over 7.
Okay.
Do you
You're all over these. That's good. That's what I like to talk to you, Doug, because it's funny because I used to talk through these games with someone and, you know, I kind of give my reasoning, et cetera, and they could always find the best way, the most logical way to make that bet, as you mentioned, maybe it's first half, team total, et cetera. And you're kind of that guy, Doug.
Well, I aim to please here, ER. Well, look, it comes down to this. This is what I said at the beginning of this podcast was that, or beginning of this discussion on the game, is that this is a team that has had trouble against Power 5 opponents in the first half. And, you know, depending on how many three and outs there are, there's only a small amount of possessions, whether it be seven possessions, six possessions the first half, depending on the length of drives. So if you're asking the Wildcats to get a touchdown and a field goal, that hasn't happened against a Power 5 opponent. They haven't scored a touchdown the first half. And if IU is what you're saying is a defensive-minded team and some of their points have been fluky and we're going to see some inclement weather in the Midwest, that's where I want to go. Because the side is lower than it has been for a lot of their other opponents. Obviously, last week in that Iowa game was a gift. It came down to 8, but it was 10 most of the week. But then you have these huge numbers like 27 and 23 against Whiskey and in Ohio State, then the first half team total is going to be really low. But that feels like it's the right price for me to get involved here.
Sounds good. Night game for Indiana. I know this team is extremely fired up. It's been a very long time since that happened, if it's almost ever happened. So big game still here for the Hoosiers.
Money won is twice as sweet as money earned.
All right, good. So we're on that together. Let's go to opposite side of the spectrum and go to UCLA and Colorado. This Bruins team has shown some life a little bit the last the last few weeks. Obviously, had some points last week, and in their last, Colorado showed some life finally back at home. But now they're back on the road. Go to the Rose Bowl here. Bruins laying 6.5, 7 with a total of 64.5.
Yes, Doug, and you know, last week we used the over the total with Colorado, and I'm going back there. And remember last year as well, for whatever reason, Chip Kelly and this UCLA program played their best football, certainly their best offensive football, at the end of the season. You know, they had that awful start, and they improved. They actually did improve the final month of the year. And right now, this is a team, once again, that is kind of showing that. And remember, you know, they had such a rough start, and sometimes that offense did not look good. The defense is not; it's really had issues all season long. But you know, right now, and if in four of their last five games, UCLA has averaged 43.5 points per game. That's a lot of points. And it, you know, last week against Arizona State, which has been a very good defense, they were able to score. Remember the Washington State game, obviously, where they scored 60-some points. And the one game they didn't, when they went to Arizona and they scored, 17 points, it was when the quarterback Robinson actually got hurt. And since he came back, they have actually showed to be better. The run game has gone, and which has kind of opened up the passing game for UCLA as well. So they're able to put these points on the board, and I see, and again, if you go back to last year, there was a trend that's kind of going on. This is an offense that has improved under Chip Kelly each of the last 2 years. So I'll see that to continue, and this Colorado defense has been really banged up. Attrition is set in, so UCLA should be able to score their fair share, a number of points. Remember that one, I'm talking about four of their last five have been very high-scoring games. That game against Arizona, remember Khalil Tate did not play as well. And meanwhile, I mean, the defense for both of these teams have been really, really sketchy, Doug. And if you, right now the depth and the talent for this Bruins defense has been absolutely gutted. Their pass defense has been atrocious. In fact, both of these programs' pass defense is really bad. UCLA currently 123rd in NCAA football, allowing 9 yards per pass play. And it's kind of some crazy numbers if you look at it within this program. But the pass defense has been absolutely abysmal here. And Colorado is kind of the same thing. Colorado comes in with the 121st rated pass defense in the country. They're allowing 8.8 yards per play. We watched this defense last Friday night, and they actually had their second-best performance of the year And they allowed all those, and they still allowed 406 yards through the air to USC. And I just don't see that these defenses are getting any better here with a program like Colorado. And I think you have two capable quarterbacks in this game with the Buffaloes here. We've seen, you know, what I believe is a quarterback that has a good chance to be drafted with the Buffaloes, with what they're able to do with Montez. And obviously they have some skill position players that have gotten healthy as well. So you just can't make some of these totals high enough with some of these games. This one that actually come down, ticked down a little bit, but I see 64. I think it's a good bet here.
You mentioned last year UCLA's offense improving, talking about for some reason. What's called coaching? I mean, Chip Kelly, you know, we just – Matt Eumanns and I for a couple weeks here on this podcast were very bullish on the Bruins this year because we felt like the health of DTR – you get things going in the beginning of the season. Obviously, did not start out like we envisioned, but the big win at Wazoo was a turning point. And I think Joshua Kelly finally getting healthy was part of the reason for this offensive explosion. So three straight overs. The one under was when DTR got hurt, although that game probably would have gone under regardless. And then the game before that at Pullman was obviously an overplay. So I'm with you on this Bruins sort of offense hitting that next gear because this is kind of what we expected coming into the year. This is why a few of us bet over their season win totals. And this is, you know, maybe why it might get there. There are three wins now. They got Colorado at home and Cal at the end of the season with the injury to their quarterback and maybe even at USC. So
right. There's
some options here but in terms of the ways to get there. But in terms of this one, I can't fault you at all because I think this Colorado offense, my one concern is, look, you can't make blanket statements with the Buffs the last 3 weeks. They've looked competent at times on offense at home, but they've folded like a cheap suit on the road. I'm worried that they cave, but obviously UCLA's D can cure a lot of that.
Yeah, it's a good point. And, you know, they did struggle at Oregon, at Washington State. Remember Washington State? I believe did they make the changes at defensive coordinator kind of right before that game? And Oregon has been, you know, that defense has shined for the most part, all season long. And, yeah, going back to that UCLA defense, when you make San Diego State's passing game look good, which UCLA did early in the season, I think Colorado should be able to move the ball fine.
They are fun to watch. Chenault, the receiver, especially, when they can get going, although USC's offense played a role in that. Let's talk about this Baylor game, which, surprisingly, the Bears are still undefeated. And you like Baylor here, laying the points on Halloween night here against West Virginia.
Absolutely. I think this is a bet where I'm going to steal your thunder a little bit early, and I think you want to play the first half as well. You just have a little bit better number to go at here. It'll be about 10 when this comes up at Caesars, kind of 10 globally right now. But 10, you have to lay 17.5, 18, 17.5 on the side here. But, you know, it's an interesting game when you handicap, and once we get into November, which obviously this game takes place, you have to take you know, a different kind of look at some of these programs, some of these teams. And we'll talk about that with West Virginia in a second. But Baylor, it is kind of crazy. This program's on a 9-game winning streak. I mean, they're talking college football playoff.
Why not?
And it certainly it would be kind of miraculous to get there. But, hey, they're undefeated. Certain things have to break. But number one, they have to look especially good here under the ESPN lights on Thursday night. So this is a team that's, you know, the schedule is going to be kind of the thing that comes back to haunt them, if you will, being in the holiday season here. But the numbers are absolutely impressive. This is a program right now, Doug, this year that's averaging 7.3 yards on their offensive plays. That's fifth in the country. And Matt Rhule, as you know, has got this defense tuned up as well. Right now, 25th in the country, allowing 4.9 yards per play. So they have been very impressive on the field with what they've been able to do. We saw them beat Oklahoma State a couple of weeks ago. Both teams get a couple extra days off to prepare for this team. Of course, Oklahoma State fired back with a nice win last week. So there's really nothing fluky with what they've been able to do. They've been impressive. It's just really been the schedule. But I think that creates a confidence within this team. And, again, they need to put on a good show here on Thursday night. West Virginia, obviously is just a total rebuild at this point under Neil Brown. Remember, they had so many seniors, guys that skipped the bowl game last year. I think they only returned a couple of starters on offense this year, and they had really they lost their best offensive lineman earlier about a month ago, if probably not their best offensive player. So they are just down to the studs, if you will, and not the studs in a good way on this football team. And, you know, their offensive coordinator basically said this week we're 2 years away. They know that. They understand that. I know the defensive coordinator a couple of weeks ago basically said, hey, on defense, we have some guys that are just not buying in. And they've allowed 52, 38, 42 points their last three games. So what happens, Doug, is they start playing towards next year. As of right now, at this point in the season, true freshmen have taken over 1,100 snaps. In fact, 1,152 snaps for West Virginia this year. From a last year, from a season standpoint, last year true freshmen took only 670 snaps. That's throughout the whole season. So they have gone extremely young. Again, this team is playing for next year. And how I talked about, once you get in November, you know, this is a, I think in a couple weeks, if these two teams were to play, I think the spread would probably be 24. So, again, I think Baylor comes out, looks really impressive here. Take them for the game and the first half.
I love it. I love it. I will say this, just to play devil's advocate, and by the way, you mentioned studs as in a construction reference, not in a good player reference. Just when you said that they're trying to talk playoff a little bit, anytime, any concern that that gets to, that has a negative effect, just they play too tight, try to do too much, all the stuff we've seen over the years when those situations manifest themselves negatively late in the year.
That's a good point, you know, and I don't know if it's as much as the players are thinking about that. You know, it's just more the media, kind of the buzz around the program maybe creates that. So it's a good question. But, you know, in this type of scenario where you need to look good here on national TV, I don't think it creates that much of a pressure.
Another game I want to talk about is Michigan. And sometimes if I have a few weaknesses or mistakes that I'm known to make is that jumping on a team a week too late, almost chasing money that I missed out on the week before. And I like Michigan here, and I don't think it's about the Notre Dame game. I think it's finally – this is more of a fade against Maryland that, frankly, I've done a lot this year. And it comes down to this. They're a terrible football team, and they're just kind of a bully. That's a term I've used here on the pod. And when they play Rutgers and they play some bad teams, they beat up on them and they cover, and they're great. But when they face good teams, they get crushed. And they have faced undefeated Minnesota and Penn State, lost by a combined score of 111-10. And I think Michigan is cut from the same cloth. 21, I'll lay it. There's no home field advantage at the Snake Pit. I'll lay it.
No, that's and I'm with you. I prefer this game as well. And Doug, I have to say, I have to go back. I think my weakness is maybe the opposite is you, where I see something, I see a team that's going to be better before I guess the rest of everybody does, and I'll cash maybe one, maybe two tickets on that team, and then I get off them. You know, I won't stay for that prolonged, maybe 4 or 5 week spread cover that you could get for that team. And we might have that kind of going in this contest because you have a Michigan team that I guess you could say is peaking, certainly playing their best football of the season. When you dominate Notre Dame as thoroughly as they did last week, outgaining them by 3.2 yards per play. Even the Penn State game probably, you know, they played better than the final score perhaps indicated. But they got that wake-up call against Wisconsin. And since then, remember, this was a team that was supposed to be better than Ohio State to start the year. So you know the talent is certainly on board and being better, creating that confidence. And Maryland is kind of the opposite. You mentioned that win against Rutgers, which was just an absolute horrible situation with guys essentially, you know, their leaders, quarterback and running backs, basically saying they wanted to sit out the night before the game. But, you know, the Purdue loss is absolutely inexcusable. Hard to believe they were a 4-point favorite in that game. They get beat by Indiana and certainly Minnesota in payback mode after that. But this is a team that's decimated right now. They cannot figure out who's going to quarterback this program. The running backs have been beat up as well. I know their wide receiver had been suspended. So, it is just going all downhill in a big way for this Maryland program. And, we just talked about it where, you start to have an eye towards next year. Certainly can get to bowl eligibility, but it's going to be tough here with Maryland's remainder of the schedule here in the Big Ten.
Yeah, I mean, they've played four different quarterbacks, right? It hasn't really mattered. Josh Jackson, probably their best. He came back a week ago from a sprained ankle and got pulled after, I want to say, two series. They've just been a hot mess, and there's no really other way to say it. I don't think their coach is very good, and I've been on them. I've been on them a couple times this year. I'm not going to lie. I think I covered one of them. I think it was against Rutgers, but I want no part of them in Michigan. Now, this is a game I would not play the first half. I think this is a full game bet where they're going to have some broken tackles and just some big runs of the Wolverines. I just don't know when they're going to come. I have more confidence in four quarters than I do two.
Right. And to speak of that first half, I'll play devil's advocate, if you will, on you on a little bit on this one, Doug. And that would be my concern, that you might have a little bit of a letdown here with Michigan. And that's really the thing that really scares me a little bit on this one because, they had the big game on Saturday night against Penn State 2 weeks ago. Obviously, kind of the same thing at home against Notre Dame and looked so good. They do have a bye week coming up before, a big finish to their season. So, that bye week, we'll see how it works out. But it's a little bit of a tricky spot for Michigan here.
All right, you said you had one other play you were willing to get into, Florida Atlantic. And I got one off the grid as well. I'll let you go first with Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, not going to go talk about this one too thoroughly here. I wasn't sure if what we're going to talk about. But, this is an interesting matchup here with Florida Atlantic, obviously with Lane Kiffin. But, they're going to Western Kentucky. And as we know, in Conference USA, Florida Atlantic is going to have the more talented team to pretty much anybody that they've been able to play. And last year they took care of business in a pretty big way. They beat Western Kentucky 34-15. They put up 576 yards of offense in that game. And, you go back to the first two games for Florida Atlantic to start the season, they look a lot better. They got beat, pretty bad by Ohio State and Central Florida. But obviously the talent on both of those teams is at a very high level. They bounced back here and have played really good football. The only loss was to Marshall, kind of a back-and-forth game. They lost that game 36-31. So they're playing to win this conference here against Western Kentucky. Robinson, their quarterback, Oklahoma transfer, got hurt and missed probably, I think, the last three quarters. But he's upgraded and expected to play in this game. So I believe this is just the better program, the better talent here. And I bet against Western Kentucky quite a bit. They've come on as the season went on, but that was a little bit fluky last week against Marshall. They were actually down, 26-3 in that game. Scored a bunch of touchdowns, or scored touchdowns late, actually tied the game up. But a heartbreaking loss to lose that game with a field goal at the buzzer to Marshall. I think that sets them back for this game. I think their energy is maybe a little bit lacking. So I got a bet here on Florida Atlantic this week.
Can't fault you there. I think Western Kentucky's pretty shaky all season, so can't fault you for that one at all. My final play, and it's a doozy. How is Liberty laying 23.5 on the road?
Well, how were they laying 7.5 to Rutgers last week is probably the first one we need to answer.
So that's my point. They lost outright as 7.5-point favorites at Rutgers, and now they have to go to... Now, look, UMass is awful, right? I'm not going to make...
They're worse than awful.
I'm not going to make a strong case for UMass here, but they did win outright as 7.5-point dogs or whatever it was with Akron.
They did.
And I just... Look, the UMass D is like dead last in some FBS and some categories. And Liberty's decent, but 23.5. There's some 24s out there. I mean, come on. Right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when all these problems that Rutgers had shown, and when Rutgers go in and basically dominates you, that kind of tells you a little bit. And you're right. I mean, Liberty was not even a team we could essentially bet on 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, you talk about UMass, and defensively you cannot say one good word about what they've been able to do. But offensively, as we saw last week against UConn, they still are capable of scoring some points, which should certainly help you get inside the number here.
Well, so that's what I was trying to break this down further. With an over-under of 70, you're looking at a team total of 23-ish.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to go over just because you saw some now. The problem is Liberty's D has been respectable at times, so I don't know if that's the right answer.
Yeah, I'll say this about Liberty as well, as you know, you do expect them to win the game. I know you hope they won't win the game here.
Right.
But Hugh Freeze, the coach, and I've known this from a couple of their earlier wins this season, but they will basically run the clock as much as possible. If they do have a lead, they get really conservative. So if you do play the over, that's concerning. However, if you are taking the points, that's not a bad thing, because they could have that 2-touchdown, 10-point lead and, you know, essentially play it conservative and try to run clock.
So maybe under 70 is the play?
No, not as much under 70, but I'm just saying, you know, in general, I would be, yeah, to score 70 points, I'd be a little bit hesitant with that.
Right.
You know, maybe you'd want to play the first half over the total.
Gotcha. I see what you're saying. This is tough. But for me, it's out of principle. Liberty should not be laying 23.5 on the road to anyone, including UMass. That's in my thought. So I'm going to have to be on them. But you've given me some work to do, ER. I got some things to think about now. Baylor first half's looking pretty intriguing.
Let's start the week. You know, we did it last Friday night. Let's do it this Thursday night.
Yeah, that is true. Quick NBA talk. Anything we need to know the next couple days, things that have stood out to you? Like, we got teams like the Rockets who have yet to cover, so there are a lot of moving parts. Mike Conley has struggled with the Jazz. The Hornets and Grizzlies, I believe, are first half covering machines until the teams they're facing wakes up. Now, these are just early trends, 3-4 game sample sizes, so you can't overreact too much. But any, like, teams that I think are stink that we didn't really maybe think that would fully stink are, like, the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
That's a team that I'm really disappointed. And I'm worried about our Bulls.
I'm really worried about the Bulls. You're right. You know, Sacramento has played a really hard schedule so far, and I actually kind of looked to see if they would have some let up in that schedule soon. And
tonight.
And what's that?
Tonight.
Yeah, and you saw them take some money here. But the Bulls are a very soft team, and they don't have any size whatsoever. We saw the New York Knicks get 25 offensive rebounds against them the other night. So that's not a great sign for that Bulls. I've kind of shifted, and I'm looking to maybe make some money over the total, bet some overs with that Chicago Bulls team, because they're going to give up a lot of easy baskets. And we know they want to play with a little bit more pace. You know, you talk about the Rockets, and the Rockets are, you know, a team that I figured would take some time to come together. I'm just not a big Russell Westbrook fan, just the way he – and I love that he plays so hard, and he certainly is very talented, but it's such a reckless way that they play, kind of an inefficiency, if you will. So how it all comes together, I think it's going to take some time in Houston. So I don't mind taking a stand and maybe looking to bet against them that team in certain spots. So, yes, a couple things to keep an eye out on.
I'm going to say this. I am praying for when Zach LaVine is out. Just load management, give him a night off, maybe tweak an ankle here and there, because that will be the biggest fade of the season for me. This Bulls team is really helpless without him. Now, they have some nice players, so the odds won't adjust that much. But you're right, they're soft. I didn't catch that Knicks game, but I can totally see them and Bobby Portis' revenge game pounding the glass. I just think I like marketing. I like some of their game, Wendell Carter, but they shoot a lot of threes. So I'm a little hesitant on the overs because I don't think they make that many. I think the opposing team's team total may be something to do.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to get blown out when they don't have LaVine. So, like, they might be plus 4, might go to plus 7 or something, and just Just lay it. Some games like that.
And that's the thing here with the Bulls. I mean, it's been a pretty favorable schedule here to start. Charlotte, Memphis, New York, Cleveland. They're going to play here tonight. So the schedule's only going to get tougher, although they are in the Eastern Conference. And you're right, from creating offensive standpoint, Levine's really the only guy. I guess the rookie point guard, White, has actually done a pretty good job. Yeah. He can kind of create some offense as well. But, yeah, you're going to have they're just a soft team. I mean, they just don't have any kind of size.
Yeah, Boylan's their toughest guy by far. but we might have been wrong on the Bulls, but I think we're dead on with the Heat. This is a good team. It's a good
basketball team. I really like this Heat team. You know, if you look at the chemistry inside, you know, I mentioned it that they got rid of Whiteside, but they've also kind of benched Deion Waiters here, who's always been just a bad guy in the locker room.
Yeah, you don't.
James Johnson hasn't met the conditioning standards for this team, so they're basically, and it's great. You know, they're still paying those guys a lot of money, but Pat Riley's like. Kind of really felt betrayed by those guys. And, like, you know, we're just putting our best players on the court. And Jimmy Butler is kind of taking on the leadership for this team. So, yeah, I'm looking to bet the Miami Heat each and every game. I mean, you know, I'm looking at the matchup, et cetera, but I'm taking a look at that side to bet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think they're a really good team. I think Olenek stinks, but besides that, they're pretty solid. And he had a terrible game yesterday. But I like that team a lot, and – so there'll be some opportunities here, so we'll keep an eye on things. But, ER, always fun catching up, my man.
All right, great. Good luck this weekend.
Kicking is for losers.
And that's the only thing we did not see last night in Game 6 of the World Series. We saw bats. We saw drama. We saw a controversial play at first base. How are you holding up, my friend?
It's a crazy game. How about the wherewithal from Soto after he hits the home run to carry his bat to come back at Bregman like that? I was impressed with that. Soto's unbelievable, man.
I may have been involved in some NBA last night, so I actually had the World Series on the side monitors, not the sound.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't really realize what happened with Soto and like the 2-1 pitch to make it 3-1, like up and in, and Verlander said something to Soto, and Soto just kind of like nodded his head, like, all right.
Yeah,
I didn't realize it was a
Verlander,
challenge before.
Who's Verlander to be talking smack in a World Series game? Honestly. How come? I mean, your guy Clayton Kershaw gets so much crap for his playoff shortcomings. Nobody ever says anything about Verlander. What's up with that?
Well, and it's funny with Kershaw, if I'm not mistaken, he's actually been great in the division series round. It's the after the division series, the LCS and the World Series where he's been terrible. And with Verlander, it's obviously the World Series.
Yeah, I think Verlander now 0-5 in the World Series. And I said before the game yesterday, I always feel good with Strasburg on the mound. Like, there's nobody I'd rather have on the mound than Strasburg. Unfortunately, he can't pitch tonight, too.
I believe it's 0-6, if I'm not mistaken. It was 0-5, and it's a record now. So I'm with you, though. I think Strasburg was the one guy. So best of luck. So you guys have Scherzer on the mound here. How is he going to pitch if he couldn't even get out of bed on Sunday morning?
Yeah, that's the concern, right? I mean, is it possible that he won't be able to pitch very far into this game? I don't know. But Zach Greinke is not exactly Gerrit Cole either. So I feel somewhat comfortable with this pitching matchup. And the Nationals have been so good on the road in this playoffs. They won Game 5 in L.A. They won both games in St. Louis. They're 3-0 in Houston so far in this series. So, I mean, they've been playing very, very well away from home.
Just be careful. As a man who who traveled to Game 7 and it was 5-0 in a blink of an eye, just be careful, Murray.
Well, Scherzer does have a history of giving up solo home runs early in games. That's something we've seen many times with him. Even the wild card game, which I attended, he gave up a couple home runs early in that game against Milwaukee, and the team had to battle back. So it's something we've seen before frequently with Scherzer.
Right. So as a man who's been down this path before.
Scherzer is so aggressive. So sometimes if he leaves one up and the hitter's on top of it, the ball gets out of there in a hurry.
Yeah. All right. Well, best of luck to you, sir, tonight. You guys, I think, are good in the futures market either way.
Yeah, we do very well on either team. We went a little bit more on Washington, but we do very well either way. So either way, the suits will be very happy when they see the number we post tonight.
Gotcha. Okay. Let's talk football now. Mm-hmm. Last week, you had some sharp plays, one of which was Oklahoma. Interesting. Did not get there.
No, that one didn't get there. What a shocking result that game really was. And it kind of throws the college football playoff out of whack. You got to think the Big 12 now probably going to be on the outside looking into the college football playoff with that Oklahoma loss, unless Baylor can somehow run the table and finish undefeated.
And I was talking about it with your colleague, Ed Sammons, and he had some good points about some of the futures market on Clemson. You know, Clemson plus 350, I was thinking it was juicy just because you can get, you know, basically pencil them in to the playoff. But if they're going to be underdogs against some of these teams, it really, well, this college football playoffs will be very compelling.
Ed and I talked about it yesterday. I mean, if they play a combination of Alabama and Ohio State, you'd have to think that right now they'd be an underdog in both of those games. But that's an if. There's no guarantee that they'll play both of those teams. And I do think Clemson, not going out on a limb here, they're almost a lock to make it to the college football playoff. So, but yeah, if they have to go through both of those two, I don't know there's much value at 7-2.
Right, and then if they beat one of them and look great, maybe they'll be favored in the next game.
If they were to maybe blow out Alabama and Ohio State struggled in their game, I guess it's possible.
Right.
But that's a lot of ifs.
Right. Okay, but your other plays from the behind the counter did really well. App State got there. Auburn got there. Ohio State got there. Again, a nice first half cover for the Buckeyes. Undefeated this year, ATS, Travis. How do you feel about that? First half covers across the board.
Not used to that.
It was nice. It was 0-0 late. Worry if you're going to cover that 7.5 and get the field goal and then the seam touchdown.
Ohio State just turned on the Jets in the second half, man. Jeez, they look really tough.
Well, and that's what they do for four quarters. That's the thing, especially when they play some of these Big Ten opponents. Obviously, Wisconsin's better than the opponents they've faced up until then. But you can't, like Northwestern was hanging with the Buckeyes early, and then all of a sudden, snap, blowout. And that's the problem. And they're just that good.
Oh, I know they are. And right now, you'd have to think they'd be favored against anybody in the country. The way they're playing, and with Tua potentially being hobbled, I don't know that you could favor anybody against the Buckeyes right now on a neutral field.
And the last play you provided last week, Kansas, that got there, too, with one of the most impressive endings I've ever seen.
I saw the replay of that. Very funny. But, yeah, Kansas was one that got bet way down. We've seen that a few times last few weeks, some of our sharper players betting against Texas Tech. They bet on them about a month ago a couple times in a row, and now they're fading them.
Right. Okay, well, I think we need to spin it forward now. What do you got for us this weekend?
I got a few plays for this weekend in college football. Kind of a weaker card in college football.
Yeah, honestly, not a fan. Okay?
It's not a great card, not a lot of really compelling matchups, but some sharper plays I have seen. Saw a guy take 17 with Georgia Southern. They're at Appalachian State. That's a Thursday night game. And that number's down to 15. But I know that everybody loves those weekday games. And by Thursday, baseball will unfortunately be over. That NFL game doesn't look too compelling. So if you're looking somewhere else to watch something besides the NBA, maybe college football.
And that's the first kickoff, too. A lot of times you get the 9 p.m.
They're
all
time.
All three are at 8 p.m., right?
Yeah, West Virginia Baylor also on Halloween, but nothing to report from behind the counter on that game.
Okay, anything on the con at the wrench on Friday night?
No, nothing there either. Unfortunately, there's really very little money on either side in that game, so really nothing interesting there. But I got a handful for Saturday. Start with a 9 a.m. kick. Saw a guy take 1.5 with Northern Illinois. Northern Illinois is now -1.5. At Central Michigan. You know, we've seen sharper guys fading Central Michigan a lot this year.
Interesting. How they've been faring?
I think they've been doing pretty well. I don't have that information in front of me exactly, but I think I've noticed that a few times. I've seen the money come in against Central Michigan this year.
Well, the Chippewas are 6-2-1 ATS this year.
But
the numbers move. So just because they're
right,
betting,
right.
I'm doing a quick glance. Like the push looks like that would have covered on the early lines probably.
Right. And, probably, yeah.
And then I don't think they would have covered Wisconsin.
The number.
at Wisconsin. I don't think they would have covered 61-0. Yeah.
Probably not. I don't think they were quite that.
Yeah, it was close 34.5, so I don't think it went from 61.5 to 34.5.
I don't think so. No, probably not. here's one that I found kind of interesting because, you know, SMU's kind of all the rage. Everybody talking about the great job they're doing this year. But this guy laid 4.5 with Memphis, and Memphis is now a 5.5-point favorite at home against the Mustangs on Saturday. That game's on ABC, by the way. SMU-Memphis.
Isn't that where game day's going?
About the, I don't know. I think so.
Yeah, game day's going to Memphis.
That says a lot about this weekend in college football, if SMU-Memphis is on ABC. And it's also because, the big game is really the afternoon game, Georgia-Florida on CBS.
Right, right. They got the dibs on that one. Although, I mean, I'm not that thrilled to watch that game for some reason. Maybe it's just because Georgia lost.
Should be a pretty good game. And the winner of that game, theoretically, is a team that could get into the college football playoff, right? I mean, they both have one loss. The winner of that game would certainly have the inside track to the SEC championship game, and a win in the SEC championship game, you'd think, would surely get them into the college football playoff.
Yeah, especially because the Pac-12 and Big 12 front runners have one loss. I mean, that's the key. If those other conferences were undefeated, I think, like, if Georgia won, would the SEC be kept out?
I don't know. If those other teams were undefeated. Yeah. It's very possible.
I mean,
very
it's hypothetical right now and moot, sure. But it is interesting.
Let's stick in the SEC. Saw a sharper player this morning laid Tennessee -11.
Yeah.
They're now up to 11.5 against UAB. Tennessee's a team that quietly has been playing a lot better the last few weeks.
Yeah, I had them second half. I mean, I know it's crazy, but I had actually South Carolina first half, and I was complaining about the clock management. Then Tennessee scores in two plays, goes 80 yards or whatever it was. And then South Carolina gets lucky at the end of the first half. And Tennessee's, to your point, I've watched that Tennessee game. Obviously, the fumble on the goal line against Bama. But even before that, Bama's, I believe, first touchdown in the second half. Tennessee forced a 3-and-out. And it was a incomplete, but the guy hit the quarterback and tackled him, Mac Jones. And as he was getting up, sort of like pushed him down to get up, and they called an unsportsmanlike conduct. That extended the drive. That was after a third and long incompletion. And then they scored. So, Tennessee legit had a shot to win that game. Again, Tua got hurt, shock to the system. But Tennessee's got some playmakers. I'll think for their record and all that a couple weeks ago. I mean, look what they did to South Carolina. Like, they're not heinous. They're not an embarrassment like some schools in the SEC are.
They're playing a lot better, and maybe Pruitt is starting to turn the corner there. And we saw a sharper player today laid the points with the Volunteers. And the last one I can give you, this is a big game in the Pac-12. Utah -3 at Washington was what the guy bet. Utah is now a 3.5-point favorite on the road in that game.
That's an interesting game.
Yeah, it is. That's a quietly a very good game in the afternoon on Saturday, Utah at Washington. Big game in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to see that game because if this were in Salt Lake, I would not be. But I am excited because it's in Seattle.
Now, that looks like that game, the Georgia-Florida game, those appear to be the two best games this week. Oregon plays at USC. That game is Saturday night. Nothing really to report there. We've got Oregon -5 at USC. That's what we opened that game. Not much handle either way yet. No sharp action on that one at all. Kind of a quiet betting game so far. But I do think the action will pick up pretty heavily on that game as we get closer to Saturday. Really, it's the marquee game in terms of the Saturday night games this week.
Yeah, that is a good one. I mean, I'm a USC fan, but I'm also pulling for the Pac-12. So I kind of want the Ducks to win out.
Oregon's loaded, man. They're just a loaded team. I don't trust Mario Cristobal. I've said that many times. I don't trust that guy, but the roster is there for sure. They've got talent all over the place.
How's my 100-1 looking?
I think they could do it. I think they could still manage to get themselves into the college football playoff. I wouldn't dismiss them. They're going to need to win out. They're going to need to win the Pac-12, and then they're going to need, I think, to get a little bit of help from some of the other conferences.
If they win out, don't you think they're in?
It depends what else happens, I think. I mean, it's so hard to speculate. It's so hard to say, like, unless a team is undefeated, it's just hard to say that winning out would automatically get you in. I mean, the one thing they do have going for them is they lost in the first week of the season. I know that shouldn't be a factor, but we've clearly seen over the years that it is, that it's better to lose early than it is late.
In a neutral field against a good team on the last, like, minute.
Yeah, sure. No, a game they should have won. So I definitely agree with you. I mean, and then the talent level is definitely there for Oregon. I wouldn't dismiss them at all.
I guess the key is the Alabama-LSU loser, because especially with the Tua status, that's a variable that changes everything.
Yeah, it's hard because you always have to consider the possibility the SEC is going to get two teams in, because we've seen that multiple times, and it's always out there as a factor. And certainly if Ohio State and Clemson went out, they're both locks to get in.
Correct. Nice. How do you you guys put up an advance line on Bama LSU?
We did. We put it up yesterday. We talked about it very briefly. I mean, we've been talking about that game for a long time, so it wasn't like a big discussion. But we put up Alabama -7. We're thinking Tua's going to go. Obviously, that number wouldn't be Alabama 7 if Mac Jones was in there. But we're thinking Tua goes, so we put up Alabama 7 with a total of 64, which is crazy. I mean, think about that total on an Alabama-LSU game a few years ago. Yeah, to see that total up there that high is kind of funny. But it just shows you how different these two teams are than Alabama and LSU have been the last few years. These are two teams that are winning with great offense. And Alabama really is very young defensively. They look more vulnerable defensively than they have in, I don't know, maybe the whole time Saban's been there.
Yeah, I don't think people really realize that. I've been talking about it a bunch. Two freshman linebackers, inside linebackers, and then – you know, usually they have that bend but don't break. You got to beat them long and throw deep and all that stuff. But they're just got holes. And before the Arkansas game, they were averaging or allowing an average of 27 points per game-ish around there. I can't remember if I have the right stat there. But they're giving up a lot of points to SEC opponents. And that's not the Bama we've seen. We saw it in the Ole Miss game, right? Like, that was a team that they only gave up 7 a year ago on the first play from scrimmage. And then these teams are kind of having their way with it. But the flip side is Alabama has an explosive offense, something we hadn't seen prior to last year. So that's why we're seeing such a high total.
And LSU too. You know, they finally have like a very good vertical passing game with Joe Burrow in there, quarterback Burrow, the Heisman favorite. So both of these teams are teams that can score in a hurry. And we've seen, I mean, I think the game last year in Baton Rouge, if I remember correctly, LSU didn't even score.
And it was 20-0 or 27-0.
And we had a national championship game. This was several years ago, but LSU-Alabama, where LSU didn't score. So we've seen really low-scoring games between these teams. So thinking that you're talking about a total in the mid-60s is strange to see, but I think it's accurate when you look at how high-powered the offenses are.
So the bye this week, and then that game is next Saturday, and it's an afternoon game. That's always interesting.
My understanding is CBS has one choice of a primetime game, and they chose Notre Dame-Georgia instead of LSU-Alabama. So that game is being played in the afternoon instead. I think that's what I read somewhere.
Questionable decision on that one.
Well, Notre Dame, I'm sure, always draws. I got to think they knew what they were doing there. But I know personally, and I loved the Notre Dame-Georgia game. I thought it was a great game. But personally, Alabama-LSU, far more interesting for me.
So you said that Joe Burrow's the Heisman favorite. I'm surprised Tua's odds are that high. What are they, 5-1?
Why do you think, why is that surprising?
Because I think
first of all, he's not 5-1. He's 9-4.
Okay, excuse me. 9-4.
I mean, he was 4-1. You're not totally wrong. He was 4-1 last week.
Right.
But now with the reports we're seeing, it sounds like he's going to play Saturday. But don't you think that if Tua has a huge game and Alabama beats LSU, he immediately becomes the favorite?
That's my
point. And Alabama's a 7-point favorite in the game, or at least according to us.
That's my point. Heisman is so connected to team success.
Sure.
And he was an odds-on favorite before the injury. I just thought that was – I'd make him like +150.
Oh, I get you. You think it should be even lower. Excuse me.
That's my point.
Well,
yeah.
You know, Burrow – well, let me tell you this. Part of it is Burrow is so low because we lose so much money on Burrow.
Gotcha.
So you've always got to look into the money in there. I mean, I think I might have mentioned this on the show before. We got some big tickets out there on Burrow. One guy's got $150 at 200-1. And then two other players have $100 each at 200-1. So we've got a pretty monster liability on Burrow, and we win a good amount on Tua. So we're not afraid to write a little bit of money on Tua right now.
I would not bet Joe Burrow at this price at all.
No.
I would consider strongly betting Tua. That would be my thoughts there.
The one guy that no one's talking about, though, is Justin Fields. We've got him at 8-1. We lowered him from 10-8.
Yeah.
Ohio State's just killing everybody. If they can, they've got a few more high-profile games left. They play Penn State. They play Michigan. They play the Big Ten championship game, in theory. If he can throw up three more really big performances and really high-profile games, I wouldn't count him out either.
Yeah, I thought the Jalen Hurts thing was going to be tough. I thought there was, like, voter fatigue a little bit. And of course, they lost. That hurts his chances.
Yeah. It should hurt his chances, but we'll see. If Hurts is another guy, if he has a bunch of really big games down the stretch, maybe he can get himself back into the mix.
Right.
He certainly has a chance to put up big numbers in that offense, no doubt about that.
All right, my man, is that anything else here to add?
No, that's about it, man. I'm just trying to fake my way through all my meetings today so I can go home and watch Game 7. That's really what I'm – I mean, I'll be honest with you. That's my plan today, is just autopilot my way through the whole day, go to all these meetings, and go home – and watch Game 7 of the World Series.
Well, and your work day is just like everyone else's, but the games start earlier for you. So 5 o'clock work day, you got to get out of there.
Yeah, I may or may not have adjusted a few things on the back end of my schedule so I can get out of here. Let's just say that.
Any basketball, any NBA sort of storylines, real quickly, like have you guys been like overexposed on Laker games or anything silly like that?
Not really. I mean, just typical NBA betting so far. I mean, I think that we'll see more of a shift in everybody to following that more when baseball ends. But it's just a typical, like, we've got a ton of money on the Lakers in the future book. We did one bet I found interesting was a guy that we really respect. He played the Rockets to win the West at 11-2 for 10,000.
Yeah, I forget when. That, I think
day,
last week.
One day last week. But
yeah.
That bet kind of caught my eye because that guy's a guy that we really think highly of, the customer. He's very sharp. He does very well on future bets. And I don't like the construction of that Rockets team. I think they're going to put up a great win total in the regular season, but I don't see them winning three series in the playoffs. But certainly I respect the player that made the bet.
Yeah, we talked about it last week. I do, just because they had pushed them to the limit. We'll see if they add a piece or something. But I will say this, Murray. It's not just Washington versus Houston on the diamond tonight. Home opener for the Wiz, hosting the Rockets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's now the two big games between Washington and Houston.
Yeah, that's a doozy. And by the way, hats off to those who are going to the basketball game in D.C. That's impressive.
We got the Rockets -8, but not a whole lot of action to report as of Wednesday morning, I'll tell you that.
Wiz, 3-0 ATS. Rockets, 0-3 ATS. Just something to keep in mind.
It could be an early season trend there. Okay,
I like this Wizards friskiness. Let's just put it, they're not good, but they do keep things inside the number. I will give them that.
You got to love a good frisky team. We'll talk about it on the NFL show tomorrow, I'm sure, but the Dolphins suddenly, kind of frisky.
That was my favorite bet of the week. Got there with ease. Not quite, but it got there.
I would say the coaching staff in Miami, they're doing a good job to keep those guys motivated because the players are not dumb. They know what's going on. So for them to continue to go out there and play hard every week is pretty impressive.
I'll tell you what was impressive was that 3rd and 20 defense at the end of the first half.
Well, that, all right, except for that play. But in general, I do feel like Miami, the last few weeks at least, they've been playing pretty hard. And this is a team that just openly punting the season. So you got to give the players that are stuck there some credit for hanging in there and not just getting blown out every week.
We'll talk more about it tomorrow.
Please.
All right, my man, and maybe we'll be talking about the Nats as World Series champions. Best of luck to you, sir.
I hope so, man. I appreciate that, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Nobody has ever bet enough on a winning horse.
Thanks to Bob Lee. That's the reminder. We got the Breeders' Cup this weekend. Travis, did you do any horse racing talk with the Bear?
Bear shockingly went in depth on the Breeder Cup.
Very shocking.
I had no idea what he was talking about. I know very little about horse racing, so I was like taking an advanced class.
We were talking in a commercial break a couple of weeks ago. Someone asked about horse racing. This is during Daily Wager, and he said something along the lines of like, "Oh no, we'll be doing some extensive Breeders' Cup stuff in a couple of weeks." And then the producer gets in my ear. He goes, "That's what he thinks." Just totally making the joke that we're not going to be blowing out the Breeders just because horse racing isn't super huge. But we will be doing some horse racing coverage on the show. Just blowing it out is a little much.
Yes. did extensive.
But I love that he's so passionate. So Kenny Mayne wants to come on, too. I love Kenny as well. So maybe we'll get some nice coverage of the ponies on Friday. So anyways, as for this podcast, that'll do it. Thanks to John Murray. Thanks to Aaron Renning. lot of good stuff here. Hopefully the picks continue to hit and come to fruition. Been trying to dish out some winners here on the pod. Travis, you got anything for us? Anything that I said or ER Murray said that was a little bit too advanced you want some clarification on?
I think I'm pretty good. I'm understanding your guys' lingo. I've got a little Gambling for Dummies book back here that good. I just highlight things throughout the week.
Any Halloween plans?
No, I feel like I'm at the age where you don't do Halloween, really.
How dare you?
Like, I'm past the age of, like, going out and doing things for Halloween, and I don't have kids, so you're in that in-between age range where you don't do Halloween.
I disagree. Halloween's the best holiday.
And no.
I'm telling you, facts are facts.
That's not even close. It's maybe top five?
You're missing out. So they asked me if I wanted to dress up on the air, and I end up not because I've been under the weather. I missed yesterday. I just don't. But I wish I got on the ball ahead of time. I think it's a little gimmicky for on air, but not going out.
Just call it the best holiday ever and then say you're not going to dress up on air.
So
though.
First of all, I went out last weekend to a party on Saturday, and it was at this big venue where they decorated, and there was a basketball hoop. And I actually have some video. I put it on Instagram of. There's just a bunch of people in costumes shooting hoops, and it's pretty awesome. There's like a stormtrooper nailing jumpers, and it just cracked me up like no other. But here's the thing, and we're getting a little in-depth TV, but it's the end of the podcast. People can always shut it off. So my thing is, in like local news or even SportsCenter, you should not be wearing costumes on set because you don't know if something serious is going to happen. Like if a major story develops, like a fatality in sports or some scandal or whatever. You can't have a dude in like a Smurf outfit talking about some serious matter. However, you can do like the end of the show can be a quick costume change or do something fun. Or like other shows like Around the Horn, Daily Wager, shows that aren't in the news realm like SportsCenter is or NFL Live or whatever, I think you can get away with it. That's just my theory over the years. Like I never did it in local news, things like that. I always think you have to be careful and protect yourself over the worst case scenario.
I'll give you
the
news or like SportsCenter, but for Daily Wager.
Right. No, we should. We should all dress up and just like, I just didn't get on it. They asked me yesterday, and I was out sick, so I was like disoriented, sleeping all day. So I said, no, I still could come up with something. I have enough in the closet, if you will, that I could break it out. So
if you're going to call it the best holiday ever, you better.
Well, I like going out. I think it's fun. Okay. Maybe I'll do it for the last segment. I believe Anita Marks will be dressing up. That's what I've heard.
Dress up.
All right, my man. Good seeing you as always. We'll see you back for the Thursday NFL pod. Thanks to everyone for downloading, rating, reviewing, subscribing, all that good stuff. John Murray tomorrow to either celebrate his Nats or mourn with me and what it's like to lose a Game 7 to the Houston Astros.